B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG, it's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
I will admit, this is low-hanging fruit on a slow day. This is easy. This is sort of... this is like talk radio... what's the word I'm looking for, Maz? It's like...
Red meat.
It's just too easy. It's red meat. It's just... you people are so sensitive to this. Patriots fans are so sensitive to this. You are more sensitive to this than any other thing. I can go cheater on you. And you get less upset at the Deflategate, Spygate, cheater thing than you do at this.
It's like sleeping with the class slut.
You are more... it's like low-hanging fruit.
Whether it's a man or a woman.
It's easy. It's easy. It's easy, easy, easy to get you riled up for this because you hate this. You hate it when people say your division sucks. You hate it when people say you have an easy road. You hate it when people say you have an easy schedule, even though you do every year. You just hate it. And so I admit, it's sort of a... just sort of an easy roll out of bed, I'll tweak them on the schedule kind of thing. I admit it.
Everybody had that person that you'd call late at night when you're leaving the bar. You've had a few too many and you're thinking, I'm a little horny.
Yep. You people are a late night booty call.
Yep.
That's what you are. So, but be that as it may,
give me some of that.
You can end it by doing one of two things. Admitting everybody else sucks and the league is down and your division blows, because then we have nothing to argue about. Or... tell me how good everybody is, as opposed to how everybody else sucks and has no clue. And then it's over.
Yeah, let me know how that works out.
Okay, because then again, then there's nothing to argue about. You think the easy schedule talk is overrated because everyone else is actually good. And so you're on firm ground and there's nothing to really argue. But I find it odd that when we talk about really anybody else, how you will rip that quarterback or rip that coach or rip that team and tell me they have no chance. And then when I come up on Monday and say you beat a lamb, you say, well, why don't you give the Patriots any credit? What? I was just listening to you. Turns out you were right. So let's have some consistency. Let's have some consistency, Bob and Easton. What do you say?
Let me tell you something, okay, you dummies? Okay, listen to me. First of all, they have the easiest path to the Super Bowl because they make it almost every year. Listen, it's simple. I'm going to drop the gauntlet. Every team in the league sucks other than the Patriots. Tony, when you were on this show, when Felger was out, I told you, foregone conclusion, Pats are going, Kansas City, see you later. But here's what goes up my backside with you two and Murray. You guys can put stock in the strength of schedule, but the only thing worse than this is the NFL draft. And you mock that throwing markers at a board like girls.
Am I right?
Respect the big board, Bob. Respect the big board, Bob. Seriously,
respect the big board, but hold on.
What's your point?
You can sit there. My point is, you can sit there and you can say that the schedule for the Patriots is easy. And now, granted, you may not have written the article and may not have established it, but you could sit there and have a show about it and talk about, oh, yeah, ooh, it's easy. When you have no idea what's going to happen. But with the NFL draft, you have no idea how players are going to be. But you can criticize when Bill Belichick drafts somebody at 31. So you can't have it both ways, Felger. You can't have it where you can mock the draft, but then say, oh, the Patriots' schedule is weak.
Does this make sense to anybody?
No, zero. I'm completely lost. And I look, Bob,
how
just...
are you lost? You're going on the future. That something hasn't
okay,
happened.
Okay, Bobby, but come on. NFL teams are far more predictable than the NFL draft.
And the other thing I would tell you
is the quality of a given draft pick, that's a total crapshoot. You know, I can tell you right now, and you know the Dolphins are going to suck. I can't tell you whether who they picked at 42 is going to play or not. No one does. They don't even know. But they know, we know, you know, I know, the Dolphins are doing nothing this year.
Yeah, look, again, every once in a while you get a team that comes out of the woodwork and that surprises. But they usually don't win the Super Bowl. Maybe they make the playoffs and then get bounced. And so you'll get one of those teams. You're going to tell me this year Cincinnati's making the playoffs?
No, and maybe one of those teams is the Jets. Mike, you seem to think so when we were talking about teams that may surprise this year. But what are they going to win? Maybe 9, maybe 10 games? And are they a real threat? Probably not. You know, like, I think 32 is too, that seems a bit much. I said it should be in the 20s. I look at that stretch they have there in November and December. It seems a little bit tough. But you can't look at that first.
Who has an easier one, Murray? If the Patriots shouldn't be...
I haven't looked at all the other 31 teams. I know, I'm
putting you on the spot there, so that's unfair.
But go ahead, Murray.
But I don't know how you can be objective and look at those first 7 weeks and not laugh. Like, as a Patriots fan, it's okay to say, like, they should be, like, 7-0 after the first 7 weeks. It's kind of a joke.
How can you not laugh at your division? And Maz did this before. You tried to Google something, and what came up is all these articles in defense of the Patriots and their division.
Yeah, look, what I Googled was Tom Brady home versus AFC East. And you know what popped up? A list of stories saying how the AFC East thing is a myth with regard to the Patriots and how their record is every bit as good against everyone else as it is the AFC East, which is fine. That speaks to the greatness of the Patriots.
That does, but how does that make the division better?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And this is the one that really goes up my keister, is where people try to defend the AFC East. And don't use your nerd stats and don't write these columns. You look like a fool. Just use your eyes. You know these teams blow.
So
they've
sucked pretty much
for the last 20 years.
The stat I'm trying to find is when the last time the Patriots lost a home game versus the AFC East with Tom Brady a quarterback.
Well, we should be able to eyeball this, shouldn't we? They lost
in a game that meant something.
Okay, well, so they lost like to Buffalo at home in week 17 several years ago.
Doesn't count.
Garoppolo played the last three quarters, I think, of that game.
Yeah, doesn't count. I mean, a legit meaningful game.
I mean,
the loss with Jacoby Brissett as the starter?
No, he just said with Brady a quarterback.
Sorry, okay.
So maybe, I was just going to go the Wildcat game. That was Castle.
I'm telling you, find it.
I mean, the Jets came.
The
playoffs. So the Jets won that playoff game.
Okay.
But that's not a division.
That's 2010.
Okay, and that's not.
That was 8 years ago.
That's not technically a division game. What's the last regular season home division game they lost without a backup quarterback playing the majority of the game to the AFC East?
I'm telling you.
Wasn't there a Jets one in there in like 04, 06, something like that?
So now we're 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost to Mangini. Lost to Mangini and Jets the last game on grass. That's when they ripped out the grass.
But again, that's like 15, 16 years ago.
Yeah, that was, I don't remember what year, that was like 06.
Oh, it's something, there's something like 40-0 in their last 40 home games against AFC.
When's the last time they lost a home division game with Brady playing the whole game and, you know, not a throwaway week 17?
I'm telling you, so somebody please find it for me.
But that could also speak to your brilliance. There is no other division that can do what I'm about to do. Okay, there's no other division that can match this. Let's just go over the coaches and starting quarterbacks from each team since Bill Belichick got here in 2000. You ready?
Go ahead. This is fun.
Miami Dolphins head coaches since 2000. Dave Wannstedt, Jim Bates, Nick Saban.
Jim Bates.
Maz's favorite, Cam Cameron. Tony Sperano.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Todd Bowles as an interim, I think. Joe Philbin.
Just really quickly, it was week 10, 2006, home loss to the Jets.
That's it. That's the last time you lost a home division game.
2006.
And that pissed off Bill so bad, he thought Mangini was cheating, by the way. You're talking about cheating. That Mangini had their signals and the players were saying we got outcoached because Mangini had your schedule or had your signals. And Bill was so pissed, he ripped up the grass. That's the last grass game at Gillette Stadium, blah, blah, blah. That's the last time you lost at home to the division. 2006.
With Brady a quarterback.
Right, with Brady a quarterback.
No, okay, so AFC East isn't as bad as you make it.
There is no other division that can give you this collection of crap at coach and quarterback that I'm about to give you. Miami Dolphins coaches since 2000. Wannstedt, Bates, Saban, Cameron, Sperano, Bowles, Philbin, Dan Campbell. Remember Hardo, Campbell? Adam Gase, Brian Flores. We'll see. How about Miami Dolphins starting quarterbacks?
This is good, too.
Oh, this is fun. This is good.
It's a long list.
Jay Fiedler, Damon Heward, Ray Lucas, Brian Greasy, A.J. Feely, Sage Rosenfeld, Gus Farratt, Dante Culpepper. I liked him.
Lemon.
Joey Harrington, Cleo Lemon.
Cleo.
Trent Green, John Beck, Chad Pennington, Chad Henney. Who goes from one Chad to the next? Chad Tuckett, man. Chad Jets. Their quarterback thing sucks so bad. They didn't just have a Chad. They went from Chad to Chad. Who's had two starting quarterbacks in 1 year named Chad? Chad Pennington, Chad Henney, Tyler Thegpen, Matt Moore, Ryan Tannehill, Jay Cutler, Brock Osweiler. What? Okay, let's just go now to Buffalo Bills head coaches, shall we? There's no other division that can match this collection of crap that I'm giving you. Wade Phillips, Greg Williams, Mike Mularkey, Dick Geron, Perry Fuel.
Perry
Fuel. Oh, my God.
Chan Gailey, Doug Marone, Rex Ryan, Anthony Lynn, Sean McDermott.
Perry Fuel.
Let's go to Buffalo Bills starting quarterback, shall we? Rob Johnson, Doug Flutie, Alex Van Pelt, he keeps coming up on this list, Drew Bledsoe, J.P. Lossman, Kelly Holcomb, Trent Edwards.
I liked him.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, something named Brian Brom.
I don't even remember that.
E.J. Manuel, something named Thad Lewis, something named Jeff Toole.
I remember Jeff Toole.
T-H-U-L-E.
Then the
T-U-E-L.
Who's the backup guy they got from Baltimore that was half the
Let me go.
Tyrod Taylor.
Kyle Orton. Tyrod Taylor. Matt Cassel started a game for him, probably against you. Nathan Peterman.
Oh, that guy blew. Josh, oh, was he bad.
Josh Allen. Derek Anderson. Matt Barkley. LeSean McCoy. Guy gets a start. They must have started in the Wildcat one game.
Didn't Peterman throw like picks on five straight passes
or something?
Remember?
Yeah. Now he's trying to latch on with the Raiders. He's in Hard Knocks.
Let's go to Jets head coaches, shall we? Compared to that list I just gave you, this is like these guys should be in Canton.
Yeah, it's like a wing in Canton.
Al Groh, Herman Edwards, Eric Mangini, Rex Ryan, Todd Bowles, he keeps coming up. Adam Gase, he keeps coming up. List of Jets starting quarterbacks. Should we do that?
The Jets coaches aren't nearly as bad as some of the other teams.
No, like I said. Compared to that, compared to what we did in Miami and Buffalo,
Barry Fuel. Oh my God, I forgot that guy even existed.
Jets quarterbacks since Belichick started here: Vinny Testaverde, Chad Pennington. He keeps coming up. Quincy Carter.
Oh my God,
Brooks Bollinger, Kellen Clemens, Brett Favre, Mark Sanchez, Greg McElroy. Geno Smith, Michael Vick, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Bryce Petty.
Michael Vick played for the Jets.
Yeah. Three starts in 2014. Josh McCown, Sam Darnold. There is no other, you cannot give me another division where you can start 2 decades ago. It's been 2 decades. We're not talking about like a short little 2 year stat. 2 decades. There's not a single good quarterback on that list. There's not a single good coach on that list. There's not a single coach on that list you would take unless you would take Rex Ryan. Nick Saban, maybe, obviously, extenuating circumstances. There's hardly a coach you would take on that list. I don't think there's a quarterback you'd take on that list. For 20 years, there is no other division you can do that with. None. No other division.
I mean, it's really unbelievable. And that is why Tom Brady hasn't lost a home game to anybody in the AFC East since 2006. 2006.
Oh, boy.
It was 13 effing years ago.
I wanted to give you a Celtics breather today, a Bruins breather today, a Red Sox breather today, but this is just too much fun. Back with more after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Top. Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go, go, go on the Sports Hub app.
All right, back to your calls again. According to CBS Sports, Patriots have the easiest road to Super Bowl 54, which means the easiest strength of schedule. Easiest schedule, easiest road. And they use a little bit of advanced thinking in there. It's not just based on last year's win-loss record. They actually put a little thought into it, and they do it right. Because, like, for example, and just the example they use, both you and the Miami Dolphins play the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. So if you punch that into a strict formula, strength of schedule, you have the same that's weighted the same for both the Dolphins and the Patriots, because you are playing a team last year with a whatever 630 winning percentage, whatever it is. Except the Patriots have them at home to open the season on a Sunday night, and the Dolphins go to Pittsburgh on a Monday night. So that's an entirely different game. So they weight the schedule based on factors such as that. And in that, I read, I didn't even realize this, that the Pittsburgh Steelers have never lost a home Monday night game under Mike Tomlin. Go figure that, huh? Anyway, back to your thoughts, Zach in Bridgewater. What do you got, Zach?
All right, Fogle, what do you always say when you talk about the difference between Bill Belichick and the rest of the coaches in the league?
Grand Canyon.
It's Bill and then everybody else, right?
Right.
So it's the same. It's the same with the Patriots. The league sucks. And as an exercise, after I hang up the phone, can you guys go through the Chicago Bears schedule for me? Show me the 16 horses of the apocalypse those guys have to go through this year. Go, list that murderous row for me, please. It's not that much of a difference. The league sucks. 32-1 aren't that far apart.
Okay, Zach. Well, here's what they write. If someone wants to call up the schedule while I'm reading this, this is what they say in the CBS story. The NFL clearly doesn't care that the Bears are celebrating their 100th anniversary this season because Chicago got handed the most brutal schedule in the league this year. After going 12-4 last season, the Bears are almost certainly going to have a worse record this year, mostly because that's pretty much what happens to every team following a year in which they go 12-4, and then they give you stats sort of to back that up. They don't really discuss, they don't give you the details on their schedule, what makes it so hard. They say their schedule difficulty rating is 110.8. That means nothing to me. Just give me their schedule.
Well, so they open up earlier that first game of the Thursday night at home against the Packers, and then they got to go to Denver for week two at the Redskins. They stink. They're home against the Vikings, at the Raiders. Stink. They host the Saints. Tough. Host the Chargers, at the Eagles.
Oof.
Home against the Lions, at the Rams. Home against the Giants, at Lions, host the Cowboys, at Packers, host the Chiefs, wrap up in Minnesota against the Vikings.
It's a tougher schedule than you.
Totally.
Their division's tougher than yours.
Exactly. Yeah. Just start with Minnesota and Green Bay. And I know Green Bay had a bad year. They still have one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
You can make case for all four teams in that division.
And even though I'm down on Denver, to have to go there week two, you know, they could get off to a decent enough start. That's difficult.
They're facing real quarterbacks. They're facing actual legit quarterbacks. Now, the caller's point is that the gap between the Bears with the toughest road and the Patriots with the easiest road at 32 isn't that great. Maybe that's fair. The gap's not huge. But don't tell me that's the same kind of schedule.
Oh, listen, again, I'm not telling you the league is great. The Patriots obviously play in the AFC, so that's a factor too. And their division's a huge factor. Their schedule this year is a joke.
And it's a joke. And that whole point about the road trips. They only travel out of the Eastern time zone once, and it's to Houston. They don't go past, that is just west of the Mississippi, is it? They just go barely west of the Mississippi.
Barely is right.
Barely.
Yeah, Texas.
I mean, my God. So there's no, like, trips. There's no West Coast thing. So never mind that. They're on the East Coast the entire season.
Yeah, and again, the Thursday night factor, the division factor, all of it. And the fact that when they do play good teams, they typically play them at home. So all of that weighs in. And again, people misinterpret this. It's a separate argument. I'm not dumping on the Patriots. At this stage, it's hard to discredit them. But the fact is their schedule, if you look at their test compared to everyone else, it's a joke.
They're good and their division sucks. They're good and they seem to get a nice road every year. And you're not alone. By the way, the team that compares mostly to you or compares most closely to you, I should say, historically, is the Niners. From 81 to 95, 6, 7, you know, even to the Mariucci years. That old NFC West was a freaking joke. The old LA Rams, that's when they had the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints in that old NFC West. Remember that division?
Yeah, they were wretched.
It was dog food.
Yeah, they were wretched.
Year in, year out.
Then in the 90s, it got oddly competitive with the Carolina Panthers, who were in that division too.
So when was that NFC West then?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so they were expansion in 96, which is expansion 95, I think was their first year.
Yeah.
Which is really sort of the end of the Niners run. They went to Super Bowl, it was 94 and 95. And beat San Diego, and then they were competitive for another couple of years under Mariucci. But so there's, I mean, just take that to heart. I mean, you don't think that helped the Niners over those years? that they got all those lambs in their division. They had all those, you know, double bye weeks where they would play the Saints and then have a bye or something. So what would end up happening is that they'd win their division, they'd get a bye week in the playoffs, they'd host that divisional game, and they'd roll out of bed and be in the NFC Championship game. It happened to them too. Same thing. That old NFC West was hot garbage. Hot garbage. Horrible division. Just like yours. So it's okay. It's not just you. Mike and Braintree. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, guys. What's going on? Yeah, so this segment being about the Patriots having the easiest schedule, it should probably be more about shaming the AFC East, which you kind of did before the last break, which is kind of what you have to do, because two decades of, you know, below mediocre play, it shouldn't be okay with the league, and they should do something about that. And, you know, you said yourself that play in the NFL is down as well. Well, why is playing the NFL down? You know, why isn't the NFL doing something to make sure that we get good games every weekend? Because, you know, any given Sunday, you can turn on the TV and see four or five different games of suck bag teams.
Hey, Mike.
You know, they're too concerned with their freaking image than they are about the product.
Oh, it's a great point. Mike, I agree with you 100%. Thank you for the call. The owners suck. This is the problem with the league. And it's just getting worse because it's all just inherited by Spalding. The number of independent, self-made guys in that league is dwindling by the day. So all it is some snot-nosed kid who inherited the team, who I can't tell you if he's done anything else in his life other than be born. And that league is getting populated with this. It was always a little bit of a problem. Now it's gotten egregious. And they all work for the team. Look at the masthead, the company director of any team. It's like Ziggy Wilf, owner, John Wilf, team president, Cynthia Wilf, CFO, Zippy Wilf, COO. Like, it's all freaking the kids.
Willie
Wilf, whatever. I just sort of made all that up. But I mean, look it up. Look I think the Wilfs. Look at the.
I'm gonna be a Wilf hunter.
Look at the Vikings team masthead. It's one slappy Wilf after the next. What are they? So I think this is the biggest problem. And you're right. It's not the Patriots' fault. This division.
Oh, my God. It's a lot of Wilfs.
Yeah, look, go ahead. Read it, because I know I've looked this stuff up before.
Ziggy Wilf, owner, chairman. Leonard Wilf, owner, vice chairman. Mark Wilf, owner, president. Jonathan Wilf, owner, executive vice president, strategic planning and business initiatives. What a fake job that is. Let me see if I can scroll down.
You can do that for any team. Yeah. And then I guarantee that the next one is going to be something like Joanne Smith, and it turns out she's a Wilf, right. But she married Smith.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can do that from like most teams. They're just populated with the kids of the owner. And so like, who's making, are there any self-made, smart, accomplished guy? There's some, but I just feel like I think that's being lost by the day. And so who's making these calls? It's Spalding. And so but in this division, how do you go 20 years? 20 years, and I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying this, with the rest of the division combined over 20 years, not having a halfway decent quarterback or good coach, a single one, unless you think Rex is good, and I know you don't. So how do you go 20 years with an entire division other than you, not having a single good coach or a single good quarterback?
I mean, it's just really, it's unbelievable good fortune. And I just went back and did the little research on it. Tom Brady has started 16 career home games against Miami. He's gone 15-1, and the one game was a throwaway. That was the one where Matt Castle chucked it into the band in week 17.
They tried to lose because they wanted the Jaguars in the first round.
So the point is, in meaningful games, Brady's 15-0 against the Dolphins. He's never lost a meaningful home game to the Bills. He's 15-0 against them, too. The one loss came in a game that Brady got pulled because it was irrelevant in week 17. Garoppolo came in and cleaned up the mess. So at home against Miami and Buffalo, in his Patriot career, Brady is 30-0. 30-0 against Miami and Buffalo. The last time he lost to the Jets was the date we were talking about in 2006. I had hair back then, for crying out loud. Like, really? How far do we have to go? They haven't lost a meaningful home game to a division opponent with Brady at quarterback since 2006.
Why is it so hard to admit, Patriots fans? Heck, we don't want to admit it. And so let's explore that after Murray's update.
Sports Hub headlines.
Aaron Nola pitched 7 innings of 4-hit ball to win for the 6th time in his last 7 decisions, getting 3 runs of support in the first inning and then cruising to a 3-2 win over the Red Sox last night at Fenway Park. Tonight, Red Sox wrap up this 2-game series with Philadelphia. Rick Porcello gets a start, goes up against Phillies lefty Drew Smyly. First pitch, 7-10. In other Red Sox news, in an interview with Bob Nightingale of USA Today, Red Sox President of Baseball Ops Dave Dombrowski asked about the rumors of his dismissal, at the end of this season, and he said, quote, "Well, I don't want to say too much about it, but I am surprised, at least a little bit. I mean, we did win 3 divisions in a World Series, but I get it. This is a tough market. It's been known as that." In other baseball news, Jeff Passan of ESPN is reporting that the use of gas station sexual enhancement pills in baseball is so prevalent that Major League Baseball sent out a memo warning players that their use could lead to positive PED tests. And this from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, sources telling him that at this point, Chargers running back Melvin Gordon's holdout is expected to continue into the season. Contract talks have not progressed as he had hoped, and he's going to continue to train in Florida for the foreseeable future. Headlines are brought to you by Coach Grill, where casual elegance meets New England comfort. Find them at 55 Boston Post Road in Wayland or by going to CoachGrill.com for more information. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Next, headlines in 30 minutes, and get Sports Hub headlines anytime in your flash briefing on your Alexa voice-activated speaker.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I mean, I can answer my own question. How come you don't want to admit the division is so bad? Because you feel that diminishes the Patriots, and maybe it does. And so you're defensive of that. So you want to tell me the division's as strong as any other division, or there's no difference between the in-division games, out-of-division games? Well, then you got to tell me that these teams are good. It's just inconsistent, because all I hear is that these guys suck, and these teams have no chance. So, again, I'm just dying for some consistency. But, again, there's been reams of, you know, people trying to explain it away. Like, you, as you keep mentioning, the Field Yates story, I don't know when that's from. It's saying destroying the myth of the Patriots' dominance in the AFC East.
So I saw a link to it, and apparently it was a link to a tweet that he had put out there about how their record against teams outside of the AFC East was every bit as good or better than the teams in the division.
Speaking to the mic. You got twisted there, buddy.
Sorry.
There
it is. Spun around.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. So it was a tweet that Field Yates put out there saying effectively that the Patriots' record against teams outside of the AFC East was every bit as good or better than teams in the division. That's what it was. Here it is. I can read you the exact one.
Please.
While the Patriots' 86-24 record against the AFC East is staggering, their winning percentage against everyone else is the best in the NFL, while they have 25 more non-division victories than any other team.
Okay, but what's their record versus that doesn't say anything about the strength of their division. That just says they're better than everybody else, which they are.
Correct. Like, see that? And that's the part that I think people miss.
Now, what's the record in division versus out of division? I thought that's what you were going to give me.
So,
I mean, I'm not yelling at you. I'm saying I thought that's what he was going to give me.
No. I guess he just says that they're better than everybody else.
Well, I know that. No one's saying they're not.
No. They're still as good against everybody out of the division. I'll see if I can get you the exact number.
Well, I mean, while he's doing that, the thing with people getting defensive, that I truly don't understand, because their dominance over these crap teams in this division over the last 20 years, it's a testament to that, to their dominance. Like, if they were kind of a paper tiger, for lack of a better term, then they would struggle against this crap that they would face year after year after year with these bad coaches and bad quarterbacks. They stomp them. You should be happy about that.
So against the AFC East, their winning percentage is 782. In this tweet, against everyone else, it's 753.
Okay. So
I mean, you know, there's only a whisker difference there,
well,
at this point.
30 points on a winning percentage. I don't know if that's one win or not, but in the NFL, that's actually kind of big.
Okay, but in the second category, they have more games.
Because
the sample is bigger.
Yeah, sure, it is. But, for me to get a really good gauge of that, I need to know what other division records would be around the league. And are you supposed to do better against your division or worse? Is it harder against your division, you know, than it should be against other teams because you play them so often and there's at least one road game in there?
But the general premise is they beat everybody.
Yes, well, they do.
Right, which they do.
Of course.
But again, this doesn't speak
But it feels like the rate is higher in the division. And if that's a difference of one game a year, that's a huge difference. That means home, road in the playoffs. That means bye, non-bye. One win is huge. When you're talking about those top couple seeds every year in the playoffs, that's the difference between a home or a road game.
They are never even remotely threatened in the division. They're not even remotely threatened.
How do they go 20 years without ever having to have really played a good quarterback in their division? I mean, it's true. I mean, is that a factual statement? Unless you want to tell me now Drew Bledsoe was good in Buffalo? Or Chad Pennington was someone you feared in Miami or with the Jets? Like,
Early Chad Pennington, I think, is maybe the best case you could make.
Because
that's a stretch.
Because I've never heard that from you. I've never heard that you feared Drew Bledsoe when he was with Buffalo, or you feared Chad Pennington, or you feared Mark Sanchez, or you feared... Now, if you want to tell me you did fear those guys, now you're a little consistent. But all I've heard is awful things about all those guys from you and their coaches. How do you go 20 years, two full decades, without having to face a real coach in your division or a real quarterback?
Find me another team in the league that has not lost a home division game with its starting quarterback, meaningful home division game, since 2006. Again, they have not lost a home division game, meaningful home division game, with Brady at quarterback since 2006.
So on the two that they did lose, one was a game against Nick Saban that Bill gave to Nick Saban. That was a game he had Doug Flutie dropkick. An extra point. Don't tell me you want to win a game when you have Doug Flutie drop kicking. And they had Matt Castle chuck it into the cheerleader formation on a 2-point conversion to end the game because they wanted their first round game against Jacksonville versus Pittsburgh. So they intentionally threw that one. And then the other one I think that they lost at home to the division was Buffalo week 17, in which Garoppolo played at least a half. I think he played 3/4 of that game.
Completely meaningless game. They lost 17-9. Brady barely played after the first quarter. They gave it, the two games they lost, they gave away.
So where Brady played.
He started in week 17, then they pulled him.
Right, exactly. You lost to the Bills 2 years ago with Brissett at quarterback.
Right.
But other than those games we just mentioned, you haven't lost, put it to you like this, a home division game that you meant to win since 2006.
Right.
And again, that was the last grass game at Gillette. That was that mud bowl against the Jets. The players think that Mangini had your play calls. And
Bush was president.
Which one? I mean, that's how bad it's been.
Seriously, though.
That's how bad it's been.
Tom Brady has never lost at home in a game of any significance in the regular season to Buffalo or Miami. Find another quarterback that has that kind of thing. Find one. Aaron Rodgers has lost at home at some point to the Lions, I think. I don't know, probably. But none of these other, they don't lose at home with Brady in the division. They don't.
At least the Packers have had to go up against Matthew Stafford, who would be by far the second best AFC East quarterback in the last 20 years by a country mile, by the Grand Canyon over, I mean, just tell me, you tell me, who's the second best coach in the AFC these last 20 years?
John Harbaugh, maybe?
What? No, AFC East.
Oh.
Rex?
Yeah, Rex.
Rex?
I thought you meant the conference. But yeah, in the East, it's Rex.
Probably Rex Ryan.
Okay. Who's the second best quarterback in the AFC East in these 20 years?
You might be able to argue for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Favre?
I'm serious.
For that cup of coffee he had with the Jets.
Yeah, for 1 year.
But again, but I almost don't count a guy who was there for just 1 year. I'm saying, like, who played there for any length of time. I'm not joking. It might be Ryan Fitzpatrick or Sanchez.
If we're saying more than a year, I'm going to go early aughts Pennington. He was pretty good.
Okay, so Chad Pennington in the early 2000s with the Jets. Yes, that's it. That's it. I mean, that is, you can't duplicate that in any other division in football over any other era. That little exercise, pick a division, I'll give you a Hall of Fame quarterback or a Hall of Fame coach somewhere in that division over a 20-year period. It's just, it happened.
Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. You couldn't possibly come up with that kind of list.
As fun as this is, and we're going to do it for most of the day, I do have a couple breakup topics, okay? I got a quick Red Sox minute for you. I got a quick Celtics minute for you. I got a quick Bruins minute for you. And then I have another football topic I want to get to, and we'll circle back to the strength of schedule with you all day long. First, though, an update from Murray at the top of the hour. Nothing now, but a wonderful word from our sponsors.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger here for 23andMe and their Health and Ancestry Kit. You see, they put it into two different categories. It's the same kit, but they call it the Health and Ancestry Kit because you get to really pick and choose what you want to do with this DNA test. I just did the ancestry part where I found out where I was from. Germany, Russia, Ireland, Britain. I'm sort of a mutt, and I found out where that all came from. That was really interesting and fun, and I want to say relatively harmless. Not too much heavy lifting there. The health and traits.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ground ball, he's trying to advance. Here's the throw to third, to tag, and he is out.
Oh no, Xander, no, no.
Base running mistake by Xander Bogaerts, but a ground ball to the left side. Cora thinking about challenging.
Big mistake here. You're in scoring position. The ball is in front of you. You know the shortstop's going to go to third base. You can't go. It's got to be either directly at you or to your left. So a big, big base running mistake there by Bogaerts.
Liner caught. Throw back to first and a double play to end the ball game. That's how the Phillies wrap up game one. Final score of 3-2. Benintendi lining into a double play. The Red Sox with a critical base running mistake as well. And fall here in game one by a run.
You enjoy that finish last night?
I did.
Murray, you enjoy that?
Well, that loss was as predictable as it was hilarious.
How many times have they done this?
Real team comes to town, and guess what? Red Sox brains turn to mush. Oh, and I love Bogaerts. Bogaerts is actually one of the good things about this terrible season. He's kind of reckless on the base paths. Him, Benintendi, for the most part, it's, you know, we were talking earlier, Maz, off the air. It's like John Farrell baseball all over again. They were 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position last night, by the way. How many times have you seen that when they play a real team? But that Bogaerts thing in the ninth inning, it's just, again, it's kind of a microcosm of what you've seen and how inconsistent this team has been all year. But please, tell me more about that 5-game winning streak and how it matters. I wish I bet on this last night. I'm such a puss. I should have bet. I knew it.
And right out of the gate, down 3-0, top of the first.
Lisa Maz's Rodenheiser take, though, that finish.
Yep, hot takes brought to you by Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric, serving Metro West for over 90 years and proud sponsor of the Patriots. The way that thing ended, as Murray noted, Xander Bogaerts leads off the ninth with a double. Man on second, nobody out, 3-2 game. J.D. Martinez hits a ground ball to shortstop. Bogaerts tries to get to third and gets thrown out. And then Benintendi hits a liner that turns into a double play because Martinez gets doubled off first. So now the play at third was way worse. Way worse. But this type, there's a difference between underperformance and stupidity and ineptitude. And that play last night, I love Bogaerts too. That's stupid.
Okay, we're giving you a little breakup topic here, a little breakup segment from our strength of schedule talk that we all are enjoying the crap out of, aren't we? Red Sox, item number one in that finish last night. Murray enjoys it because he's really taking a heel turn on this Red Sox team.
No, because I'm right about this Red Sox team. That's really what it comes down to.
What's your bottom line with this Red Sox team, Murray? Say it.
The championship was the anomaly. It was. It really was. What you saw last night, what you've seen this season, what you saw under John Farrell, the inconsistency. They're not playing up to their level. They're so talented on paper. That's what they really are. They're the millennial, I want it easy Red Sox. Kind of stealing some of your take on that, Maz, because you refer to them as the millennial Red Sox. Like, if it's going to be difficult, oh, I don't want to try. That's what they are. They want everything easy. Any bit of pushback, they fold. The championship was the anomaly.
There's your Red Sox minute. Let me give a quick Bruins minute. Did you enjoy the Red Sox minute? You can weigh in, 617-779-0985. Quick Bruins minute in The Athletic. Joe McDonald says the Boston Bruins and Bruce Cassidy have begun discussions on a possible contract extension for the well-regarded coach. Cassidy has 1 year remaining on his deal, and they're going to extend him, as they should. He's done a really nice job.
No question. He deserves it.
Okay, so there's lots of things that I like about him. There's, you know, I like most of what he's done. There's just two things I want to talk about going forward, what I think he needs to, what I want to see from him to really I don't know, to be perfect or to just, you know, sort of fill in the gaps. I think he bears some of the blame last year for the Stanley Cup final loss. I think he rode that first line way too hard. And not that the riding caused their bad play. He just, they weren't your best line, and they kept getting the most minutes. And I thought Cassidy should have been harder on that line as that finals went on. They were getting their ass handed to him. And they were developing bad habits. I mean, Marchand and his back-checking, and Marchand in his own zone, and Marchand in the corners was kind of a joke in that series, as was Pastrnak, who was a freaking joke in that series. Yet, they got the first power play shift every single time. They got over a minute on the power play almost every single time. They were allowed to stay out there as long as they wanted, no matter how many times Marchand wouldn't get back on defense. How many bad back-checking plays did Marchand make in that finals?
Oh, it felt like a ton.
There were two that stood out. The unforgivable joke, pathetic of a line change in Game 7 at the end of the first period, which we all remember. And then there was one in Game 2 where he just let Tarasenko go from mid-ice in and just totally gave up on the play. And I think that first line got their ass handed to them, developed bad habits, and Cassidy never adjusted, never sort of held their feet to the fire. There were a lot of nights that it was Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson that were the line that was going, and they didn't get first-line minutes, and Marchand and Bergeron and Pastrnak continued to. And I want to see Cassidy toughen up on that unit. I don't know, maybe even split it up, for crying out loud. So do something with that first line. Don't be afraid to split it up. And if Marchand's going to play like a jackass and Pastrnak is going to be soft and not engage, then at least split them up or at least take away some of their ice. He's so tough. Cassidy's so tough on the rest of the roster. Like, how tough he was on Rask was brilliant. Finally, someone held Rask's feet to the fire. And he got more out of Rask. And I think Bruce is tough on most players. Toughen up on that first line. They could use it. They lost you the Stanley Cup, for crying out loud. And then I need him to bring more out of McAvoy. You know, Cassidy's a former defenseman. He's known for being a defensive coach and good working with defensemen. McAvoy's the future of the team. Bring something out of McAvoy. Those are two things I want out of Cassidy going forward after he gets his extension. There's your Bruins minute. Here's your Celtics minute. There are a couple things that I wanted to hit on. One was Gordon Hayward spoke yesterday. I just wanted to use that as a jumping off point for how I think this is a fascinating year for him and, you know, what we can expect from him. At least I haven't gotten, or you haven't played up. I don't know if he's done it, B-Rob. Has he done it? Like, last year, every second day, I got some stupid Instagram video of him shooting off a chair, him running sprints in the gym, him shooting off his butt from the free throw line, him shooting this, running that, jumping here. Like, oh, wee, look at Gordon. Oh, wee, look at Gordon. And he wasn't even close to being ready and was a shell of himself. So this year, I feel like I don't have quite the social media presence shoved up my backside from him, which is refreshing. You know, just show up and be in shape and be ready to go. But he can opt out after this year. And if Jimmy Stewart were here, he'd tell you he doesn't love it here. The wife, Penelope, doesn't love it here. And he's a candidate to opt out just like Horford was, and no one sees it. No one sees it coming. B-Rob doesn't think that Hayward's going to, you know, he's $34 million next year. B-Rob says there's no way he gets that kind of money out on the market, and there's no way he opts out. And I disagree with B-Rob. If Gordon Hayward has an all-star caliber year, if he goes back to what he was with Utah, you don't think he'll get $34 million on the market?
Or somebody might give him a little less annually, but he'll get a lot of money.
He'll and maybe he and Penelope get to go to someplace. Well, at least she. I guess, apparently the word is she doesn't love it here.
Wanted Miami, according to Jimmy.
Yeah, South Beach.
So I wonder about Gordon Hayward. Also, a big problem on the team last year was the minutes and the roles between the wing guys, Brown, Tatum, and Hayward. They haven't exactly solved that thing, have they?
No, they haven't. No, that's still there.
So, you know, all needs to be figured out. Is Hayward long for this team? Does he want to be here? Is he an opt-out candidate? Because mostly when these guys can opt out, they mostly do, don't they? I mean, isn't that usually across the board? They usually opt out.
Yeah, I would say so.
So, that's just one thing. I think it's an interesting year for Gordon Hayward.
Unless they suck, then they don't opt out.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, B-Rob, that'd be interesting to look at. When guys have a chance, they have a player option. What's the percentage of guys that opt out? I bet it's 90%. I bet it's really high because the money always seems to be there. Anyway, item number two, and this has just occurred to me. How come we haven't gotten the Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant press conference with the Nets?
Well, because Durant's rehabbing from his injury and his surgery, I would think.
He can't stand behind a podium and hold up a jersey and shake the owner's hand and take a picture? I mean, don't they do this everywhere?
Pretty much.
And isn't Kyrie maybe working on that stupid movie down in Tennessee about the haunted hotel?
Jim,
maybe he's
I don't
too
care.
Busy.
When you sign someone for hundreds of millions of dollars, you come in, you hold the
I'm not trying to make excuses for these a-holes. I'm just trying to give you some, you know, some reasons why they might not have done it.
But an explanation, not an excuse.
Talk about another example, though, of the inmates running the asylum and these players doing whatever they want. Oh, man, I'm not going to show up for no press conference. Even though they just gave you combined, what, $300 million and just turned over the franchise to you, these two can't be bothered, even though they live there, to go one morning to the Barclays Center and hold up a jersey and take a picture and shake the GM's hand and maybe answer a few questions from the media and then beat it for the rest of the offseason. Think of that. Think of the entitlement and the control those two are going to have when they can't even be bothered to come in and hold up the jersey.
Oh, and if you think it's going to be bad when they're both there, what do you think it's going to be like now with Kyrie by himself? Because Durant's not even a factor. He can't demand anything really this year.
Doesn't that strike? Isn't that amazing? What a total, like, and I know they're there's an ownership change coming there with the Nets, so maybe that plays into it. But how freaking disrespectful. You're the franchise. This is a new chapter in the franchise, and they just, you know, paid you hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're turning the team over to you. And there's season tickets to sell and sponsorships to sell and all of this. And all you have to do is come in and do that introductory press conference thing. And these two can't be bothered to spend an hour out of their offseason just to come in and hold up the flipping jersey. Think of that.
I thought Kyrie was happy to get home.
Oh, my God. And so that just also leads to Irving hasn't done a single thing. He hasn't answered a single question. So talk about ducking the questions. And all the hard questions that are going to come his way from the likes of Boston, you know. Talk about ducking it. Finally, speaking of Kyrie Irving, you know what? Thanks to B-Rob, you know what tomorrow is the 2-year anniversary of?
Tell me.
His signing?
Danny Ainge's arguably biggest loss.
The
2-year anniversary of the trade for Kyrie Irving. 2 years ago tomorrow, the Celtics traded for Kyrie Irving. You know that? It came out of nowhere. Excellent, B-Rob. Gives me hope I could use another bombshell from the Celtics right about now if they're willing to do something late in the offseason. But it came this late in the offseason. Remember that?
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
So 2 years ago tomorrow, and B-Rob's going to write something on Boston Sports Journal, so I encourage you to read it. We'll talk about it tomorrow more. And we can talk about it today if you want. But what would have happened if they had never made that trade, if Danny Ainge had just taken a harder look at Kyrie Irving and learned what a complete asswipe this guy was and realized he wasn't worth building around? What if Danny's just done some more homework and not bought the cheese on Kyrie Irving, and he still had that lottery pick, and he still had the salary slot, and he had all that flexibility? Because in the time that Kyrie Irving was here, Kawhi Leonard was traded. You could have done that. Anthony Davis was traded. You could have done that. And any time in those 2 years, you could have gotten the Anthony Davis thing. You could have gotten Kawhi Leonard during that time. Popovich would have traded him to you. But instead, you had it all tied up in Kyrie Irving. 2 years ago tomorrow, Kyrie Irving, the trade was announced. And so we'll celebrate. We'll celebrate that anniversary tomorrow.
Isn't it amazing how differently we feel about him now than we did when they got him?
I mean, seriously.
Holy
think
crap.
Of it. But still, that thing that they haven't done the press conference yet is just amazing to me. I mean, my God, how disrespectful can you be to not even just deign to do that?
I mean, if that thing takes more than a week on the day they announced the signing, that's a long time.
I mean, it took Kemba Walker a couple. Fine, if it's a couple weeks, it's a couple weeks. I don't know, but it feels like they're not going to do it. Feels like they're just going to show up when they want to show up. I mean, that is just. That's the NBA.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.